Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and welcome you to Senate Finance. It's Monday, February 18th, 9 a.m. We are joined today by co-chair, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Olson, Senator Machicki, Senator Wilikowski, and myself, Stedman. We also have Senate President Giesel, Stevens, Costello, and we may have other members that come and go along the way. And we have modified the schedule as previously posted at the end of last week. We got a little bit, we didn't get the workload done as anticipated Friday here at the table due to the questions, which is fine. But it took two departments that we were going to try to get done Friday, Judiciary and the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. We rescheduled them till tomorrow. So we will repost the schedule. We'll try to keep on schedule as much as possible. It may be a little difficult depending on the committee members' questions. And it appears now that we may not have ledge finance before us till Monday. We'll just kind of see how things go through the week. We have a few of departments that may be a little bit slower than others. We are now joined by Senator Hoffman. What I'd like to do is try to stay focused on the departments in front of us and the budget type questions. There'll be a lot of policy questions that some might be applicable with the interface of the budget, some of them may not, so try to make the questions applicable to the budget issue. And again, for those watching at home, what we're doing here at the Finance Committee is going through each department with the Office of Management and Budgets Director from the governors to review at a fairly high level the governor's proposal, so all members of the committee and those frankly at home will see some of the bigger budget components that we're talking about and struggling with as far as policy goes before they're directed down into the subcommittee process, which gets kind of compartmentized for all of the senators to follow. There's a certain all members of the Finance Committee chair subcommittees, and the other senators are on the subcommittees. But to try to keep a feel for all of the moving parts of the budget this year, and there's so many of them, I thought it was beneficial to have this review here at the table to keep everybody kind of up to speed. So, and we'll try to hold our pontificating to a minimum so we can get through. I know it's hard sometimes, but we'll try to stay focused as much as possible. So today, we're going to have the Department of Education and Early Development, and if we finish them, we'll go to the statewide systems. So I'd like to invite the OMB Director, Ardium, forward. And I know I don't get my tongue twisted quite properly for the pronunciation of her name, and I'll work on that. If it was Svensson or something like that, I'd have an easy time, but I'll work on that. And if she can introduce herself for the record, who she represents, and then the folks at the end of the table, when they chime in, they can do the same, and we will be underway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's Donna Ardwin, the Office of Management and Budget Director.
Good morning. I'm Heidi Teschner, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Education and Early Development.
And I'm Michael Johnson, the Commissioner of Education and Early Development.
Okay. Ms. Ardwin, if you could fire off, that would be appreciated. Take us through and then turn it over to the department when you see fit.
Great. We're going to start with the Department of Education and Early Development.
Good morning. Again, for the record, my name is Heidi Teschner, the Administrative Services Director with the Department of Education and Early Development. The slide before you provides a funding comparison between our FY19 management plan and the FY20 governor amended budget. Overall, our funding is decreased in the governor's amended budget. Of the UGF, or the general fund funding in the blue bar, a little over $1 million, consists of unrestricted general funds and designated general funds, and about 98% of that is our unrestricted general funds. The green is our federal, our other funding, and the gray is our federal funding, so just over $250 million in federal funding for FY19 governor amended. The other chart on this slide provides a budgeted comparison between FY19 management plan and FY20 governor amended. There is a small decrease in the positions between those 2 years, and overall, majority of them obviously, we have 266 full-time, 14 part-time, and 2 non-perm positions.
So if you could help the public, what is the slide on the general fund other than Fed? What are we supposed to get out of that?
Chair Stedman, that provides the committee and the community in the state that how Department of Education is funded. So majority of our funds do come from general funds. And as I stated, unrestricted general funds is the majority of that $1+ billion. And we have other funds that consist of the public school trust fund, statutory designated program receipts, interagency receipts, and that's the $61.6 million in the green tab, and our federal funds of just over almost $2 million that we majority pass through to subrecipients. And that includes our title, our Every Student Succeeds Act title funding, our special education funding, the impact aid is included in there. So that's the types of funding that currently fund the Department of Education.
And is the funding going up or down? What are you doing? Tell the committee what you're doing.
Going forward, and governor's amended, as we'll get to the next slide, we'll talk about some of the major decreases that are presented in the budget, that our funding is currently projected to go down in FY20, based on the reductions that we'll talk about forthcoming.
Okay, so the proposals to reduce education funding roughly $310 million or some number? Is that?
Approximately, yes.
Okay, and you'll go through that in the next slide. And the position headcount is roughly a negative 7. Is that
sure,
correct?
That is correct.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Education, I think, is one of the key components in the state's budget that everyone says they support. I think that that was quite evident last year when we added $20 million to the fund for 19 and another $30 million to the foundation for FY20. But the budget, as the chairman points out, reduces this budget by over $300 million. $300 million. But to put that into perspective of what is really happening, you're proposing to cut just about 1/4 of the funds in general funds, 1/4, 25% of the budget in education with this proposal in general funds. From my viewpoint, I find that completely unacceptable, and I would probably say that if you ask the average person in the state of Alaska, are the funds that we're spending on education adequate, too much, or need to be reduced? I would probably say that 25% of them may agree that the budget is too high. But from my viewpoint in my district, even though education may get a black eye on its record of performance as compared to other states, education is still a very high priority to all Alaskans. So I'm wondering, how does this administration justify just about a 25% reduction in education. What are we trying to accomplish other than it's a budget issue and we need to balance our checkbook?
So maybe we should go to the next slide and walk through that and then come back to that question of the justification for their interest in the reduction. Senator Von Imhoff, do you have a question on the first slide?
No, that was a good idea because I think we're going to have questions
on the second slide. Okay, let's go to this. Senator Wilikowski on the first slide.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Under AS 1407-150, it says that the commissioner has the responsibility and authority for the preparation and execution of a budget and for the other fiscal affairs of the department subject to the approval of the board. Has the Board of Education approved this budget?
Go ahead and just for the record, say who you are so that for the transcribers, please, before you start.
For the record, I'm Michael Johnson, Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. Through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski, the State Board of Education met last week. They received well over an hour of public comment. They received a presentation by Director Teschner on the budget, and the board, almost all the members expressed support for Governor Dunleavy's budget to balance revenue and expenditures, but they decided to table the motion to let the process play out in the legislature before they take action on the budget.
Okay. Senator Olson and Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, so what I'm hearing you say is that the State Board of Education did not do their statutory obligation or has not acted on their statutory obligation to go ahead and approve this budget. Is that correct?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, the board decided to table the motion in order to see the budget process
no further questions,
the legislature.
Okay. I think that is a no.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, and I won't pontificate as bad as I want to.
All right, because we want to keep it short, please.
Commissioner, how is the magnitude of this cut to education going to improve outcomes in Alaska for students?
Through the Chair, Senator, the question was asked why we're doing what we're doing. We're doing this because the state is out of money and we need to balance our budget. Was mentioned earlier about monies that were spent last year. The monies that were spent in FY19 for additional education were spent out of the CBR, out of the Constitutional Budget Reserve. We're draining reserves to do it, and we've run out of reserves to drain. We're proposing this so that we can get our budget balanced and our fiscal house in order.
Senator Bishop, brief
follow-up. With all due respect, ma'am, that's the wrong answer.
On the first slide, Senator Wilikowski, if we could.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Johnson, last year, last February 13th, you testified that the department's capacity to meet its constitutional obligation would be, this is a direct quote, would be accurately be described as stretched at this point. We have little or no margin in the department. For example, when an employee leaves, we don't have the margin in the system to accommodate that kind of situation. So when you have two or three employees leave, it stretches to near the breaking point because we don't have that capacity. That was your testimony last year. Does this budget improve upon our ability to meet our constitutional obligations? Or weaken our ability to meet those obligations?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski, the proposed budget doesn't reduce personnel inside the department, the K-12 division.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, we'll go on speedily to slide number two today. Or I guess it's page four, but. And if we could, I think what we'll do, we'll keep on the same process. We'll let the presenters walk through the slide, and then when they're done with the slide, we'll go back, and we can take questions from the committee members on the points within the slide. And if you have, as an example, if you had questions on this number one, statewide support, then try to, if you could, kind of flag me. And we'll try to address as many questions on that as we jump around, so it's just not a complete shotgun approach. It might make it easier for the public to follow. And there is, and if we have to back up and jump around a little bit, that's fine, but we'll try to match up your questions to the subject matter, and we'll go through the process. Go ahead and continue.
Mr. Chairman, we're having some technical difficulties up here. Does everyone have the next page in front of them?
We will get to the next slide for the public because we'll have a brief at ease. Come back on the record. Senator Birch has arrived, and we've got a visitor from the other bodies, Rep. Wilson also. But if you can go ahead and take us through the slide, please.
Yes, again, for the record, Heidi Teschner, Administrative Services Director with the Department of Education. The first bullet on this slide is a statewide support executive branch 50% travel reduction. This is based on FY18's actual travel within the department, so this reduces overall 146.6 general funds from the Department of Education's total. That travel reduction overall for the department is about $350,000. There's no questions on that one. The next bullet
we're going to go through the whole slide.
Okay.
And then otherwise, it'll just be mass confusion for the next week.
Perfect. Thank you, Chair. The next bullet is a reduction to the foundation funding program of just under $269.4 million. This is a straight up reduction to the foundation. This is not a reduction to the base student allocation that is set in statute. The next bullet states a withdrawal of the one-time FY20 additional grants to school districts of $30 million. And that's unrestricted general funds.
$30 million.
The next bullet is the withdrawing funding for the WAMI Medical Education Program. And WAMI, for everybody who knows, is Washington, Wyoming, Alaska, Montana, and Idaho. This program, it provides 20 medical students in Alaska to get a medical education through from the University of Alaska via the University of Washington School of Medicine. And the last bullet is a reduction of the K-12 programs and other early education grants within the department of just over $16.8 million. This includes about $6.8 million for the Head Start grants, $320,000 for Best Beginnings, about $474,000 for parents as teachers, about $1.2 million for the additional early grants that were added for the continuation of the Moore settlement schools, and then $8 million in their pre-K grants. And that part of that $6 million is a two-year FY19 and FY20 multi-year grant that is providing additional support.
That completes your slide?
That completes my slide, Chair.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. So looking at the reductions in the BSA, it is about $1,000 to the BSA. And when we look back in history, the year approximately when the BSA was about the same size was back in 05-06 school year. So I started to kind of look at some of the comparisons between 05-06 to the present. And I can, to some degree, I hear the story going, well, gee, the average daily membership, that's the number of students, back in fiscal year 06 was 131,000. And if you look at 2018, it was 129,000. So the number of students statewide have actually declined in that period of time. Yet, of course, we know that the amount of money paid towards education has gone up. From fiscal year 06, it was $805 million. Fiscal year 18, $1.2 billion. So student count is going down, money's going up, what's going on? Well, maybe we should just, what are they spending it on? I'm not really hearing that from you. What I'm hearing is we're just going to cut it. Well, here's what they're spending it on. When you look at employee benefits, 2006 was $302 million, and in 2017, the latest information that I have is $596 million. That is a $294 million increase in 11 years, or 97%. So districts are spending less on books and curriculum and more on health care for their teachers. No fault, it just kind of is what it is. So rather than just making a big across-the-board cut and say, districts, all 53 districts, you're on your own, figure it out, good luck. Maybe a better approach might have been, let us help you with your highest cost driver and see if we can, as a state, come up with a solution that makes sense, that helps everybody. And I'm not really hearing that. And I think that's a problem, because education's dealing with it, all the departments are dealing with it, and all it is a big swath of $296 million, or $269, excuse me, on the BSA, and say, good luck. I'm hoping that I might hear later an actual mitigating plan on, hey, maybe we'll do some broadband to kind of help you with some of this, or we'll invest in broadband, we'll invest with healthcare costs, something along that line.
So the question is?
Why didn't you address the largest cost driver in education, and rather just making across-the-board cuts with no mitigating factors? Or I haven't heard any yet.
Or, yeah, if you could help the senator on the process, philosophical process that went through to come up with these numbers.
Through the chair, thank you. Good question, Senator. The first part is that we don't control school districts and we don't control how they spend their money. We have data that's similar to that that shows that money is being spent elsewhere than for instructional. For example, Alaska, the data that we have shows that only 54% of the dollars going to the district are spent for instructional. Another thing we don't control is they also receive local funds, which would add another $500 million to this chart. So there's a lot of things that are local control that we don't do. That being said, I think we're extremely open. The commission would be very open to proposals that you may have to mitigate some of those expenditures so that more money can go to the classroom.
Senator Hoffman.
That may be good and well, but the problem is this administration is proposing somewhere around 20 pieces of legislation to change the law. I understand, and I think the school districts are well aware that they have self-determination to decide how the dollars get spent. But the legislature and the administration put those formulas into place and modified them many times over the course of the years. And I think Chairman Von Imhoff makes a very, very strong case that the administration is not coming forward in a constructive manner in order to address this. It's all about the checkbook. It should not always be all about the checkbook. We need to look at education in general. You, Commissioner Ardwin, said it's about the checkbook, only about the checkbook. It can't be only about the checkbook. It has to be about our obligations to educate students. And you, Chairman, you need to take that responsibility and run with it. That is what the people of Alaska expect you to do, is to defend and try to improve education for all the students of the state. That is your job, that is your responsibility. And I guess I would close in saying that your board needs to come up with a recommendation that Senator Wilkowski stated. Do their responsibility according to the law and not wait for the legislature and hide behind the legislature and see what they would do on the budget. They need to do their responsibility according to the law and come up with whether or not they support this budget. And, Mr. Chairman, I think that should be a strong, very, very strong request of this committee.
I think we should have Commissioner Johnson, for the public, just kind of explain your structure, who appoints the Commissioner of Education, how is that structure different from, say, OMB, or not OMB, but like Department of Transportation's Commissioner. You want to help the public with just a structure?
Chair Stedman, the Commissioner of Education serves at the pleasure of the State Board. The State Board selects a commissioner, forwards that name to the governor, and the governor either approves or rejects that selection by the State Board of Education.
So I guess to the earlier question, you can respond back to the committee, the interest the committee members have in the board's timely or untimely review and support or non-support of the budget presented this year. I think it sounds like, and I haven't read those statutes, but if that's if Senator Wilikowski is correct, sounds like that's an obligation to be done. Is that, can you help me with that, educate me a little bit?
Chair Stedman, Senator Wilikowski is correct in the statute that he cited. Attorneys at the Department of Law have told me that that statute is subject to the Executive Budget Act. So the State Board of Education's budget acceptance or approval is subject, according to the counsel I got, the Executive Budget Act.
Okay. Follow up, Senator Wilikowski?
My question was whether or not anyone in the Department of Law has expressed any concerns over the constitutionality of this budget in terms of whether or not we're meeting our constitutional obligation to adequately fund education?
I think we could probably ask that to legislative legal or also for clarifications of that, but sounds like a pretty broad type question. But can you help the senator with a brief answer on that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, nobody from the Department of Law has indicated that to me since the budget came out.
Okay. If we could back up to item number two, the reduction of the formula, and there was a comment made that it wasn't a change entirely in the BSA, it was another change. Can you explain to the public and the committee what that the reference to that comment of the 200 and virtually 70 million rounded off, or 269 million, I guess, rounded off, if you can round down, reduction and how that works with the formula so people at home could follow the process?
Yes. Chair Stedman, again, for the record, Heidi Teschner. The foundation formula is set out in statute, including the base student allocation. So currently in statute, that's $5,930. The department calculated the foundation funding formula amount based on our FY20 projected average daily membership, so the student count. In statute, if the foundation formula is not fully funded, then the department can prorate the balance to all school districts. So this $269 million reduction is prorating the overall amount that was calculated for the foundation formula.
Okay, so the BSA is at $5,930 per individual. In their desk at the day they count how many students you have. And then it goes through this multi-column, you know, whimsical and magical spreadsheet that comes out with another amount, and it's adjusted for the size of the school and some locations and how many students need help, special needs, and there's a litany of things that we'll go through another time in another meeting to come out with what each school district gets per student. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and then so we started at $5,930, and where would we be with the BSA-based student allocation at the beginning of the formula?
Are you referring to with this reduction, Chair Sedman?
Yeah, with the decline, with the reduction of the $269 million.
An equivalent, Chair, is about $4,880.
$4,880. Okay, so we're taking it down $1,000 plus.
$1,050, yes.
Have we ever lowered that, the base student allocation before? That you're aware of, or you have memory of? Or?
Chair Sedman, our records show that it's never declined. It's always been on the rise. And it's right.
That's my recollection, too. We've never reduced it. A lot of times, or normally at the table, we concentrate on the BSA, the base student allocation number, and the reductions, and I understand the total dollar amount moving, coming out of the formula. It may be beneficial going forward to have them both, because the discussion, it's easier for a lot of the members to lock into the base student allocation number. That's what we talk about a lot, because we all have different outcomes in the formula versus, depending on your location, if you're up in the northern or the western or southern or Anchorage. We have a question. Somebody raised their hands. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you said we can go back to the last slide if we just can click back one. And this is just based on some of the comments I've heard. And we're seeing kind of a theme of shifting costs to local governments, which means local property taxes, local sales taxes will be going up to meet this difference. Ms. Ardwin, you talked about the local contribution, but I don't know if you understand that there's a connection here when you remove $300 million, because of federal law, the fund to the cap locally is lower as well, so it exacerbates the problem. The locals can't respond with higher funding. So I'm talking about this slide, Mr. Chairman, because I think it's important. This slide seems to indicate that there's a budgeted position comparison reduction of 7. But if you look at the shift, even if you use $100,000 per year salary plus benefits, you're actually talking about thousands of local positions that the local districts can't match, because if they fund to the cap, they're still put at the same cap because of the trickle down from the funding formula. So with a 25% reduction, you're talking about going pushing high 20s and 30 for student per teacher proportion right now. The question for the commissioner is, with this adjustment, you're going to be talking 40 to 44 kids per classroom. Mr. Commissioner, think about your child in a classroom with 44 kids. Can we adequately deliver an adequate educational product with 44 kids per classroom?
Commissioner, if you could help unwind that question and help the public understand the magnitude or the finer points of it and respond to the question itself.
If I may begin, sure. Through the chair, point the additional funding that's not shown on this slide, my point was there's an additional $500 million that is collected locally that goes to the state school districts, to the school districts, meaning that this reduction is a reduction of a total base of over $2 billion. So it is not the percentage that you are citing. It's off a base of over $2 billion. That was the point of my bringing us back to this slide. So the reduction is a lower percentage than you've stated.
And then on that part of that question, Mr. Commissioner, can you give us your thoughts about the student-teacher ratio and what you think this budget is going to produce or affect or not affect? Or
Through the chair, Senator Machicki. Any reduction in funding is going to be difficult for everyone. There are no easy answers before us. I think class sizes will vary from district to district and those unique settings. I can't anticipate how each district or how each classroom would respond if these reductions are passed. Schools and districts, I think, would have to do what the legislature is doing, and that's getting public input, coming together, problem solving, and figuring out how to meet the needs of all students with whatever funding they receive.
Here we have Senator Welikowski. Senator Hoffman, did you have a question also?
Yes, I do.
So you can go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To each of the panelists that are testifying here to this committee and to the people of Alaska, we see the $270 million plus a $30 million of one-time funding that this last legislature approved, and not to mention the other $20 million that the governor had said that he wanted to eliminate. So what we're talking about is $320 million reduction total, but for 2020, it's $300 million. Can you give me, as prepared as you are, how much money does this mean in reduction to the largest school district, the Anchorage School District, with a $300 million reduction?
If you could help Senator Hoffman with that, if you happen to have the formula run.
One moment, I'm trying to pull it out.
Okay.
Again, for the record, Heidi Teschner. So Anchorage School District combined between these the foundation and the one-time money, it's a $85.7 million.
Okay, and then if
$85.7 million, how are they expected?
Senator Hoffman, you need to speak into your mic. Not that we all want to hear you, but some of us do.
$85 million. How does the Anchorage School District, when they're facing even a $3 to $5 million reduction, how are they going to be able to wrap their heads around this? You know, it's an impossible question, and I don't expect you to answer it, and I don't expect that they will be able to answer it either. This is an impossible task.
If you could help Senator Hoffman with this question, if there's been responses back on the ability of the districts to implement this, and the reason I'd also like to ask within that question, the school systems have contractual obligations with their employees. Sometimes they need more time to respond to a downward pressure on a budget because they're under contract with employees. And my recollection before, when we had talked in the legislature about reducing the base student allocation and putting reductions within the K-12 system, the commissioner at the time expressed some concern, and a lot of the superintendents, that they need a year's notice so they can implement some of this stuff and smooth out their contractual obligations so they're not stuck between a rock and a hard place. And can you help us with that from a budgetary perspective, or maybe the Commissioner Johnson could help us with the flexibility that the local level has to respond to any reductions, much less a large magnitude of reductions in the inelasticity of their employee base?
Through the chair, or Chair Stedman, in terms of employee contracts, the districts have certain dates and times when those contracts are issued before the end of the school year, and dates by which they can notify employees that they would not be retained, such as non-tenured employees. Having said that, it would be difficult. In terms of the impact question, now that the governor's budget is public, we are evaluating the impact on each of the 53 unique districts in the state. I will personally be reaching out to superintendents. I've already spoken to a few to find out from their perspective the impact if the budget passes.
And I think you have, in your previous life, were a superintendent of schools. Is that correct?
Chair Stedman, that's correct.
And from just your historical management history, the schools that you were superintendent of, what flexibility did they have, or did you have as their superintendent, if you were faced with reductions?
Sure,
and maybe
Stedman.
You could, maybe when you answer that question, you could tell the folks at home what school districts you were superintendent of.
Chair Stedman, I had the privilege to be the superintendent of the Copper River School District. While I was superintendent, due to declining enrollment because of the economy in that area, we had to make reductions each year, and it was never easy. There were never easy answers. There was never a cut that I found that everybody supported. And there was hardly any solutions that everybody agreed upon. But the cuts did provide an opportunity for some very meaningful discussions in our community. When I was superintendent, and I would realize each year that we would have to cut, and some years it was substantial, my first reaction was shock. And then I would meet with staff and start working on solutions. And then I would meet with each school's ASB and present them with the facts and get their input. Then I would have a work session with the Board of Education and get their input. And then we would present the budget to the board. It was never easy, and there were many hard conversations, but there were also conversations that would not have happened if we had not been in that situation.
And I'm a non-educator. I come from a totally different background in education, so I need to be educated a little bit myself here. So the reductions that you've had, and I assume Copper River School District's probably similar to some of my school districts, the size of Ketchikan, Sitka, Petersburg, and Wrangell. They're all kind of, you know, medium size, not as near as big as Anchorage by any means. But can you put this kind of in historic relationship as far as the magnitude of the reductions we're looking at today versus the reductions that you looked at in your previous life as superintendent? Is this normal, abnormal, just a, you know, a major difference or a minor difference?
Chair Stedman, I certainly couldn't call reductions of this magnitude normal. And the reductions that are in this proposed budget set within a context that, unfortunately, is abnormal. Our state's in a tough spot.
Okay, let's put a finer point on it. If you could tell us what the formula-driven number is for Copper River last year and this year, we'll get an idea. Because I couldn't tell you what my districts are off the top of my head, unfortunately, for me. My superintendents will probably remind me that I should have it memorized, but I don't, unfortunately. So I have to use Copper River.
Chair, I have the current, I have FY19 or FY20's projected foundation, but I don't have FY19 in front of me. But would you like the actual amount or the reduction amount? So
both, or either one, both of them probably, because you don't have the beginning number, so we can add them together.
FY20's projected state entitlement for Copper River is $6,837,257.
And then what's that?
And
what's
with
the delta?
The prorated reduction, it's $5,566,200 for a difference of $1,271,057.
One sixth, roughly, is that right? Pretty close? Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead, Senator Dunleavy, or Senator Machicki, not Dunleavy. Dunleavy is the one that gave us the budget.
I know, we do have our similarities. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this, again, it's coming from a guy that has a lot of ideas on reducing this budget. I agree that we must reduce the budget, but I didn't get my question answered. Mr. Chairman, I just have a request. Again, it seems that there's a misunderstanding on the connection of funding to the cap, how that will also be reduced by 25%. Could we make a request from the Department of Education, who puts out students per teacher numbers, on the local match reductions due to this reduction and the student per teacher changes to the chart that they publish due to those reductions? And then we can ask that question in the future if 40-plus kids per classroom can adequately deliver education.
Senator Machicki has a question, and he's, we'll be heading down that road so the department could work on that, running it through the formula, and we'll have that discussion some weeks forward from here, looking at some of those questions when we actually look at in more detail, the aggregate numbers. I think that's very good, and to help remind us how the system works and the impacts and the reserves potential that are reported in the by district. I think you have that also. So we can get a feel for the impact of the reserves. And then I'm still concerned about and not clear on the timing of the employee contracts. My understanding from historical finance work here at the table that sometime in the March, April timeframe, they want to have their employees under contract, and they're always employees in particular, and the superintendents, like to have as early notice as possible of their funding so they can lock down the contracts. And we've spent many hours here talking about the benefits of early funding education versus late funding, which normally led to an increase in funding. So can you help me with that timing? Clearly, Commissioner Johnson, you've got the history as a principal. You've had to face that on your desk. Can you help me with that timing of when in a perfect world, should we have this numerics worked out so all the superintendents could react in a timely manner? And then we'll go to, I have a series of questions, Senator Von Imhoff and I think Senator Wilson, Senator Olson then, and then Wilkowski will go around the table. If you can put a finer point on that for us, educate us.
Chair Stedman, the sooner that you can secure good teachers, the better. I hope that's answering your question. There's not a certain date when you have to have a teacher hired by, but clearly the goal in hiring a teacher is to hire the best teacher possible, and the early bird gets the worm.
Maybe it's better to come from the superintendent's organization. Clearly, we've been politically slapped around over the years by giving the education funding out in the middle of May at the end of the session versus first part of April. I think every one of us have felt that and have been in the legislature long enough to know that. And my concern is we're not going to have this budget wrapped up until, you know, well in the middle of May, maybe longer. So we'll work on that and get a it is what it is. It's not good or bad. We just need to understand that when we make these policy decisions. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. So just a kind of an observation. I'm not really sure how much the commissioners overall were really engaged in creating this budget. I think several of the commissioners were not chosen until just in the last couple months. 6 weeks. I think that I kind of get the impression many of the commissioners are in response mode at this point. I'm sure that they're going to be schooled up pretty quickly before these subcommittees. I think in education, with my background being on the Anchorage School Board, I kind of look at our current governor. Governor Dunleavy has background as a superintendent, and I believe he served on the Education Committee here in the Senate. And I would just think that there would have been more of a plan when rolling out one of our top constitutional requirements here on obligations for education. Education has been his passion. It certainly is my passion. And there just seems to be cuts and then nothing more. It's just, it's like an incomplete. Our office did a quick brainstorm. And we thought, well, what about something to do? Well, if we're going to cut $269 million, let's invest in broadband so communities can communicate with one another. Let's work with the community campuses, which they're, I think the administration is trying to incorporate with the university system. That looks like cross-collaboration with departments, something that the Dunleavy administration has discussed. I'm just not seeing it. Expand the residential stipend program. So that's if students want to go from the smaller communities and attend Bethel High School, that they may, and there's money for that. That's been a good program, is my understanding. Let's expand it. Pave the way for tribal compact agreements and help with health care costs through pooling of lives. This is just my office's brainstorming. So my question, Chair Stedman, is, was there any evaluation of the impact of these cuts, number one, and number two, any attempt to try to mitigate them? And that's for the ASDs.
Okay. Through the chair, Senator, again, great questions. We see the fiscal plan as solving our fiscal problems in the state, but not the end of the process, the beginning of the process. And yes, the commissioner is working on ideas. We'll be working with community campuses, working with the Department of Labor, working with school districts, taking a look at the formula, working with the board on that. So this is the beginning of that process, not the end.
Okay. It's the beginning of our process.
The process to work on this challenge, not only solving the, working with the fiscal resources that we have, but taking the opportunity perhaps to work with a reformed University of Alaska College campus system, as well as working with the Board of Education on changes in the way we our formula is funded, and many of the things that you talked about, Senator Imhoff. I think we see this as the beginning of that process, not the end.
Okay. Senator Wilson.
Yep, I see it coming. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I just want to declare my conflict of interest of being a on-call part-time employee of our Manusa-Susitna School District out in the valley. But, you know, we can't control the number of kids in the classroom, neither can the state. We can't control how dollars are spent in the classroom. Mr. Johnson, I just have a couple of questions here. I mean, in our school district, we've had opportunities to cut their budget, I mean, themselves, and different proposals through the years, over $20 million, but they chose not to. And these dollars do not go directly to the classroom at all in terms of the different ways that they could have re-innovated the ways they provide their educational opportunities. We have school districts that have fleets of planes. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I only know of one district that owns a single plane.
Okay. And there's school districts that provide full-time benefits to their part-time volunteer school board members too, correct?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I'm not aware of that.
Okay. Is there a possibility that you can get back to the committee on sort of the use and the dollars of different plans, initiatives? And then furthermore, just a question. Is the administration willing to provide technical assistance for any school district that may ask to help them out through this troubling time to sort of ask for that administrative help or just ways that they can best implement these reductions in dollars?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I'm absolutely committed as long as the state board allows me to be the commissioner to do everything I can to support school districts in effectively spending whatever money they receive, whether that's more or less. And the staff at the department, I think, is equally committed to provide whatever support and that we can. Some of the issues that Senator Von Imhoff mentioned are we've already begun discussing and brainstorming ways that we can support the school districts. If school districts have to sustain cuts, then I'm also confident that there'll be some creativity that comes from school districts that I hope that we can share across the state. So having said all that, all I can say is that I'm committed to supporting school districts as long as I'm commissioner.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Tishner, as we look at the next slide four, there's actually two questions I have, Mr. Chairman. First one has to do with the bottom one. It says withdraw the funding for the WAMI medical education program, realizing that there are 20 students per year going through that system. What do you do with the students that are already in the pipeline that are sophomores, juniors, or in their third or fourth year getting ready to go into residency? Are they still being funded?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, my understanding is as of fiscal year 20, we would no longer be funding this program. I don't know exactly, I don't have a specific answer to your question of exactly what would happen to those in the pipeline, but I'm happy to research that and get back to the committee. I just don't know.
If you can get back to the committee on the status of that, and you might as well put some historical view on it also to help us so we don't have to go through our old files.
Absolutely.
Kind of the synopsis of the WAMI program. And Senator Olson's been very interested in the WAMI program ever since I've sat at the table with him 14 years ago.
Mr. Chairman, my second question.
Go ahead.
Has to do with, and it's probably more to the commissioner, has to do with study after study has shown that pre-K programs have worked to get especially students in rural Alaska that are somewhat lagging behind into a position where they can go ahead and keep up with people throughout the state. It's after I looked at this budget, it appears on the next one where you're talking about the reduction of pre-K programs and other grant programs that are there, that those grants have been rescinded. And I guess what's troubling is that 2 weeks ago, I have a communication from your office dated February 4th that, quote, I believe the issue in question is specifically regarding the FY 2020 Head Start funding. The Department of Education has not rescinded the pre-K grant funding. As you go down to the next paragraph, it says, Department of Education intends to distribute new letters of intent to award for the FY 2020 Head Start funding by the end of May and early June. I guess what's troubling here is that the school district in my Senate district are wondering, where are we? And I guess I'm asking you, does your office hold, or does the OMB director decide what's going to be happening with these programs?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we distribute the funds that are appropriate to the department. I'm not entirely clear on the interaction you're talking about. If it may be the Head Start grants, and so before the budget came out, the intention was to proceed with those grants as we had in previous years, but I don't know if you can speak more to that particular grant.
Yes, again, for the record, Heidi Teschner. Through the chair, Senator Olson, so we had, the department had changed. We're in the process of changing how we were just going to distribute this. I'm just going to give history. How we distribute the Head Start funding.
Mm-hmm.
And through that process, there was pushback from the Head Start grantees. And so we had one that appealed. And based on that appeal, that's when we rescinded the original amounts that were projected to go to each Head Start grantee in FY20. And so now they're working on, with the Head Start, obviously this funding is subject to appropriation, and that if the funding were to continue in FY20, they would work on a system of how those funds would then be distributed to Head Start grantees in 20, again, subject to appropriation.
Chairman, if I could clear that up.
Sure. Follow-up?
Can you just tell me in one or two sentences what I can tell my Head Start grantees in my Senate, in my school districts, that yes, they do or no, they do not have funding or look forward to funding in the FY20 fiscal year?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I would tell them that the department will still work with them, but it is subject to appropriation by the legislature whether or not they will physically have funding in FY20.
Okay, so let's remember it's not the OMB director's budget, it's her boss's budget, the governor's budget. She's the messenger and works for the governor, and we are the appropriators. Sometimes we have to remind the executive branch that we're the appropriators, and sometimes they get over in our lane, and sometimes we get over in their lane, but you know, let's keep track of whose budget it is and our roles. So we had a couple questions, Senator Bulikowski and then Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pre-K funding was required as part of the Moore versus State settlement to improve outcomes in the poorest performing school districts. It has improved outcomes in those districts, and I'm curious, do you believe that cutting pre-K funding will improve or decrease outcomes in the poorest performing districts in the state of Alaska? Yes.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, pre-K is important. It's advantageous for targeted populations, and there's still some other pre-K money that we will be sending out. We applied for a federal grant that we received, I think was over $2 million, and we'll be working very hard to identify additional outside funding that we can support as many pre-K students as we can. Some districts support pre-K apart from those grants.
Senator Wilkos, you have a quick follow-up?
Yes. And just on the budget as a whole, is it your position that schools across Alaska will be adequately funded if we pass this budget, or do you believe that local communities will be required to add additional funds to adequately fund education?
Through the chair.
Yes, go ahead.
We have answered the question from the senator about adequate education funding. He's asking us for a legal term. He asked us if the attorney general has advised us that there's any issues with regard to adequate funding, and we've told him that no, we have not heard any issues from the Department of Law with regard to adequate funding.
And we can,
Mr. Chairman, on that point, I believe the question was to the commissioner, not to the OMB director.
Yes.
Yes, I understand that, but I've also spoke with the OMB director to try to keep the conversations of the next week on the budget subject itself. Some of these questions that are going to come up are better answered through other departments, and I think some of the legal type questions should be responded or delivered to other departments. Department of Law, I'm sure we're going to have a whole litany of questions for them to answer as far as stability, but if you could, maybe the commissioner could give us kind of a broader answer. I know some of the senators will give you answer A or answer B, but it could be answer Z. So can you give us just a general feel if you're so inclined?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I can't answer the legal questions regarding adequacy. What I can say is that school performance has many variables, and state funding is only one of them.
I think the adequacy formula or question that has come up will be a subject of further hearings, because we have some litigation settlements and a few other things some of us will be concerned about in the fairness in some of the rural urban. So, Senator, who's next?
Hoffman, Senator,
you're
from
next.
Bethel, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier I stated that under the third bullet point that the amount was $30,000, and that's what shows up on the page up there, $30,000. So I think the listening audience should, and I was corrected by the OMB director, Ms. Ardwin, that this is not $30,000, even though it says it's $30,000, that is $30 million. So all of these figures up here, let's add three zeros, put a comma where the period is, and then add the zeros accordingly. I don't know if this was intentional by the department to show that the amount is less than it is, but it is the larger number. That reduction is $30 million, and the reduction to the formula is the $270 million. You know, I don't, again, I don't know if this was intentional by the presenters to minimize the reductions that are here, but let's not be fooled when the people that are looking at this slide, this, because it does not, normally up on top it says that you have to add the three zeros. This slide does not show that. So this slide is misleading. And now to the question that
just
I have.
Just a second, Senator Hoffman. We'll get to your question in a minute. But for those watching at home, it's standard format for us to drop three zeros and to consolidate it down. So in this case, the 30, what would look like $30,000 is in millions, and it's a normal protocol to go ahead and footnote the slides or the presentation that they're in millions. It's very easy to omit that because we get so used to working with the truncated numbers. Otherwise, we'd be looking at when we're working in the billions at the table and we go down into the pennies, it gets confusing. That's why we like to have our numbers right, justified and truncated. So there's no ill will here. There might be a slight oversight on not footnoting it. It's in millions. So those watching at home, we will try to have and help the presenter when they inadvertently omit that to have it on there, because clearly we don't worry about thousands and hundreds. We worry about millions and billions, and sometimes we can't even get within a handful of millions when we get, especially when we get into our revenue forecasts and things like that nature. We round off to 100 million plus or minus. So anyway, that should help in that definition a little bit, Senator Hoffman. There's no skullduggery here. There might be a slight oversight, but go ahead and ask your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For this senator, pennies count, dollars count. And even though at this table we look at millions, in my school district, pennies and dollars do count, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. And it may be a standard format for this committee to understand that, but it should be noted on the page. So my statement is that I would say that the proposed budget that we are looking at here today is being received with less than enthusiasm by this committee. I may be more than enthusiastic on objecting to it, but I don't see the thought going into this budget on what are our alternatives. I think our chairman, co-chairman, Senator von Imhoff, has stated it quite elegantly that we need to be better prepared and be more diligent when we're looking at these large cuts. And for the presenters, it would seem that at least some of those ideas would be presented here today and not being presented at a later point, because statutorily we are required to meet for 90 days and constitutionally 121 days. So I think the presenter should be cognizant of the time frame that we're under, and this governor I know has been here for a couple of months now, but at least there should have been a better presentation for the justification of one of the most important responsibilities that the citizens of the state of Alaska require.
I understand Senator Hoffman's concern and indigestion. I have talked with the OMB director about trying to keep things streamlined. Maybe we tried to streamline them a little too much, try to keep it on the budget presentation and the numerics so we can try to get through this, and you know, this week, or you know, hopefully Monday at the latest. Otherwise, I'm afraid we could get bogged down. We are, you know, going to have multitude of hearings going forward, and we're going to go into a lot of this stuff. But in the presentations of the departments, if they've looked at and thought of things like that, it doesn't hurt to, at a high level, throw them out on the table. Ms. Ardwin, do you have a quick comment for that,
or
answer that question? And could you pull your mic down and a little closer to you? Just shove it down. There you go.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I appreciate that question because this is a budget presentation. This is an OMB budget presentation. It is not, for example, the opportunity for the commissioner to talk about those things that are critical to his job, which is increasing our performance. And if we started discussing the performance that we have as a state in K through 12, it would probably take him several committees to talk about that, what we need to do about that. We haven't discussed the adequacy of our performance, which is not good. Talked a little bit about the lack of dollars going to instruction, but those things are for another committee, another day. Today we're just talking about the fiscal plan that OMB put together.
Okay, thank you. And then we have Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Bishop, I think, is next.
Thank you. I just want to kind of put a little bit in perspective here. The governor ran on a campaign to pay a full dividend this year, and without an income tax, really the only way to do it is to cut the budget. Well, doing a quick calculation here, just to kind of put things in perspective, we have about 18 agencies. And with the UGF funds, if you include education and you include the university, it's about 15 total state agencies adding up their UGF budget is equivalent to what we're paying out, what we would pay out under this proposed budget and dividend. So you have a choice. The public has a choice. This is what a budget looks like to pay a full dividend. How does it sit with you? We are basically paying out, in a proposal to the public, 15 agencies worth of UGF funding. How many employees is that? How many programs is that? How many Alaskans are served with these programs? And I'm including the university and the entire DEED budget in this. So I think this is just something that people need to contemplate and think about. How does that feel? What do you think?
Well, I think we're going to have that discussion after we get through the whole budget overview and we have further meetings. We're going to also, as referenced earlier, previous meetings, we're going to be spending some time on cash flow and our savings. We're going to have a cash flow report from Treasury coming forward. We're going to talk about that, and that's kind of like the end of the, closer to the end of the budget process when we compare the impacts between reducing or making ad hoc draws, extra draws on the permanent fund over the 5.25, change in dividend size, taking away the liquidity that the state may need, the Constitutional Budget Reserve for emergencies, budget reductions, what are our levers, and how do they interplay with each other? So that's kind of coming down the road a little bit, but that's where we're headed, to have that policy discussion so we can come back after that and decide what we want this operating budget to look like as the appropriators and send it forward. So we got a lot of work to do and a lot of listening and input from the public and school districts and employee groups and retired people, and just pretty much, we have a small state, pretty much everybody's going to be able to have time to put their 2 cents in, and we'll draw those conclusions. So don't pull the curtain up on the last part of the show until we get there, though. We might draw the wrong conclusion. Senator Bishop.
Well, and now it's my turn to pontificate, since that went out the window here earlier in the meeting. So. To be fair, you've had 2 months to do this. And what you've done here is a monumental ground shift. And in any good business practice, there is nobody that would come in and do a $1.6 billion cut across the board without doing due diligence. You don't have the time in 2 months. So with that being said, I look at this education reduction like you're a client coming into the banker, we're the bankers, and you haven't made a very good case why I should loan you some money. And I'm kind of summing up what's the theme around the table here. So I'm not saying that, for me, that I'm always looking for efficiencies, but it's hard to make your case to show me the efficiencies when you haven't been able to do that because you haven't had the discussion. And Ms. Ardoin, you hit a nerve with me. I know it's not personal, but when you talk about outcomes, I'm going to tell you something. The education debate in this state, you can go back for 60 years and read the newspapers, and it's no different 60 years ago on education funding than it is right here, right now, today. So I'm done for today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. We'll have ample committee hearings coming up to lay the arguments out, both pro and con, and to explore these and having multitude of groups coming. So this is the, again, just like to reference or remind the public at home, this is the beginning of the process. We're not even really a week into it. So we got a long, long ways to go. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, it's your statutory obligation to prepare a budget that meets our constitutional obligations. So I'm a little surprised that you're unable to sit here and say that you have met that obligation, that this adequately funds education. That being said, my question is on two items, and one is on school debt reimbursement, and the other is on Breeze Law dating violence programs. Does the budget affect a school debt reimbursement or Breeze Law dating violence programs in any way?
Mr. Chairman, we're going to present school debt reimbursement, I believe, at our next presenter, so I'll defer to that.
Okay, and the short answer to that is yes, it does impact that, and yes, it's coming attractions, and we'll go into it. Indeed, detail. The other part of the question was Breeze Law, is that correct?
Breeze Law, teen dating violence.
You could help the senator with his question on that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, there is no budget impact to that program.
Okay, that's good. We like good news at the table. Next up, Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. This is kind of on your point, but it's very difficult. So we show these numbers up here, and my constituents want me to support cutting the budget. I do support cutting the budget. We have some good ideas on how to cut the budget, but it's hard not to have that conversation on converting that numbers to policy or an outcome, because that's what those numbers mean. And what I have a question, Mr. Chairman. The question is, we passed a bill last year on rehire for teachers that the department supported. Why did they support it? They're holding job fairs that used to have hundreds of people attend. Now at the job fairs for teachers, they have more tables, more people at tables trying to hire teachers than the teachers that show up for jobs. They're crickets. You can't fill the positions that you have open today. Most of it's due to uncertainty. And when we support policies such as in oil and gas to provide certainty so that we increase investment in our state, yet we make our education funding so uncertain, Commissioner, is this going to make it easier to fill the jobs that are available or more difficult? And I'm sorry, I know we're asking questions that are off of the numbers on the page. They're off of that subject, but it's almost impossible not to convert it to how we're actually going to meet our mission, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machicki's feeling guilty. He's drifting off of the budget. That's good to hear. But if you could help him a little bit with what your thoughts are, potential impacts on hiring or attractiveness with the budget as presented before we take our step at modifying it, and then we'll go to Senator Wilson.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, it's an entirely fair question, so I appreciate the question, and but I have no easy answers. Budget cuts are going to be difficult, and I think there's hard questions on the table for education. The broader context is there some, as Senator Von Imhoff noted, there's some difficult questions for our state. And so I can't sit here and tell you that any of this will be easy. It will be tough. and school districts will have a tough job ahead.
Senator Wilson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I just have two questions. You know, school districts, again, we can't, or the school boards, Department of Ed, we don't control what spending occurs. We can't set a cap or limit on administrative funding versus actual programmatic funding. Some school districts do better. We have school districts that have the unallocated reserve accounts that are maxed still. Some have depleted in terms of their management and structure of how they utilize their funds and spending. Do you know if this budget, where we're at in terms of per capita spending with the rest of the lower 48?
I missed the last part of the question. Per capita spending.
Yeah, per capita.
What?
To comparative to what per capita spending is the lower 48, where this proposed budget is for school funding compared to other states.
Could you give us, do you have a feel for that? Or you can also get back to the committee with more detail, which would be nice on that question. But do you have any initial comments to this question of per capita funding per student?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, we're very high compared to other states, but I don't have the exact ranking with me, but we can get that to you.
Could you bring back to the committee the FY19 comparison and then adjust it for the budget as proposed so we can kind of get a delta if we're where we're moving on that list as best you can?
Yes, sir.
We have other questions, or we've worn them out on education yet. Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On WAMI, there have been several reports on this, one dating back to 2006. Department of Health and Social Services recommended increase in the number of students to 30. Just 2016, the United States Department of Health and Human Services designated most of Alaska's geographic area as a health professional shortage area based on the lack of primary care physicians. There's an estimate we're going to need a couple hundred more physicians in the state of Alaska. And has there been any sort of analysis on the impacts to the cuts to the WAMI program on the ability to bring doctors into the state of Alaska?
I'll ask the commissioner to get back to you, and including, by the way, as you suggested earlier, Mr. Chairman, the history of this program and the difficulties that this program has had achieving its goals.
Okay. We'll have a future presentation on WAMI, which we've had several times before in history, so we can have the department dust them off and update them, and we should have a pretty good historical perspective along with the pitfalls. We have other questions on Department of Education and early development before we go on to the next one. Seeing none, thank you for the presentation and the questions. Next up is statewide items. And we'll have Mr. Barnhill introduce himself for the record so we all know who he is, although he's a very familiar face here in the committee room. And we'll let him and the Ms. Ardoin present the statewide.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Barnhill, Policy Director, Office of Management and Budget. I'd like to say I'm happy to be here today to present to you, but wouldn't exactly be true. The conversation that just happened, Mr. Chair, I think was incredibly important for the state of Alaska. As policy director, I just want to reflect to the committee that with a deficit of the size that we have, there's literally no plan that we can put before this committee, some element of which somebody won't hate. I want to acknowledge all of the frustration in the room and express deep respect for this committee and the incredibly difficult and agonizing tasks before you. Over the weekend, the Anchorage Daily News issued an editorial board opinion reflecting the incredibly difficult job before this committee, before the state. I think they made a very important point, some of which I think has been reflected in the comments to date, and that is essentially we're at the end of the line. Governor Dunleavy, I think, has done an incredible job of bringing the issues into very sharp focus. If there's some element of this budget you hate, then unfortunately it has to be replaced by something else. And we look forward to the discussion. We want to be active participants in that. And so thank you for the conversation. Look forward to more. My purpose today is to present the legislative proposals that accompany this budget. And I will step right through them. There's a number of revenue proposals. These aren't new revenues. These are redirecting existing revenues. The first one is to repeal the local petroleum property tax. This is, one could say it's like a shared tax. It's not a shared tax. I call it more of a coordinated tax. It was enacted in 1973. It authorizes, under the municipal code, the municipalities to tax petroleum property within their jurisdiction. There's also a corresponding tax in Title 43, which is the state tax code, to levy the same amount of tax, the local petroleum property tax, is then a credit against the state petroleum tax. In FY18, this tax collected approximately $560 million, of which $440 was collected by local municipalities, and the residual went to the state of Alaska. This proposal seeks to repeal the authority of municipalities to collect the local piece, meaning the entire amount of this property tax would come to the state. It is a significant part of the governor's budget. It constitutes 25% of the $1.6 billion shortfall. I want to immediately recognize the incredible impact to communities that enjoy that tax, but there are difficult choices before us. The next tax is to repeal the fisheries business and resource landing tax sharing. And that's approximately $28.4 million. This is a shared tax. This tax is shared both in statute and by appropriation. This would bring an additional $28 million to the state. It's offset by the final revenue piece, and this is the alcohol tax, and in this one we propose to share that tax through the community assistance program. That would be $20 million in addition to the $30 million that goes annually to the community assistance program. These two pieces taken together offset each other in part, netting $8.4 million to the state. I'll pause there, Mr. Chair, to see if there are any questions, discussion.
We could break it down on these. I was thinking about that. Break it down per category, paragraph. Senator Wilson.
Yeah. Did the administration look at doing a partial repeal of the local petroleum property tax or the repeal of the sharing fishery tax to lessen the burden as like a step-down program to say 75, 50, 20 over the time, over?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, there's a variety of ways of doing it, but again, going back to my opening comments, anything that you take off the table has to be replaced with something.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Barnhill, we've known each other for a long period of time, and I appreciate our relationship, if not downright friendship. And I like the way you put things into perspective, that the governor has put into sharp focus what's going on out there. You also stated that in this budget there is something for everybody to hate. I don't quite agree with that, because What I see within this budget is the oil companies don't see anything in here to go ahead and hate. They, in fact, probably embrace this budget because they are left harmless. And so because of that, I find it somewhat disingenuous that the administration would go ahead and try and present this before us without looking at the what you said was sharp focus. There is another avenue, and that's revenues. And so, Mr. Chairman, that's to the policy director, Mr. Barnhill.
Okay, do you have a question on impact of the petroleum property tax on your district and how much of that is? I'm kind of, we should lay it out in a little better detail for the public what this is. I mean, it's a pipeline corridor in our oil basin, but can we help us with that, Mr.
Mr. Chairman, that wasn't my question.
I know that, but it was such a high-level review of the petroleum property tax. It doesn't affect my district. It affects Valdez, affects North Slope Borough, affects Anchorage, affects Fairbanks. And for those watching at home, we should tell them what it is. There's a group, I don't have the list in front of me, but it's in the revenue source book of the boroughs and the dollar amounts. So let's, if we have that, could you throw that on the table so people at home can understand what we're talking about?
Sure. Through the chair, and I will endeavor to answer Senator Olson's question. But first to the details. Every year, the Department of Revenue puts out a revenue sources book. There's a chart and a narrative about the petroleum property tax and how it works and the revenues that are collected by the state and municipalities. I have the chart in front of me, and I'd be happy just to read through it. The North Slope, so first starting, there's $563 million that are collected under this tax in FY18. Of that, the North Slope Borough collected $372 million. Fairbanks North Star Borough collected 12. Municipality of Anchorage, 2.4. Kenai Peninsula Borough, 15. City of Valdez, 38.4. Those municipalities, that collection totaled about $440 million, leaving a residual of $123 for the state.
Okay. To answer the senator's question, the governor's been very clear that he is not contemplating raising taxes to fix our budget problems. He sees them as a spending problem, and he is not contemplating tax increases.
Okay, we have Senator Von Imhoff and Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Senator Stebbins. I appreciate it. Just since we're on the subject of petroleum taxes, I'd like to state for the record that in fiscal year 17, we passed the bill HB 111, which did address oil taxes for petroleum companies. A couple of provisions were removed, as in ring fencing, so companies can't necessarily take rigs that are performing at a loss and apply them to expenses or rigs that are performing at a profit and pay a net tax. Ring fencing was introduced, so oil companies are actually going to be paying more taxes. You also decreased the amount of number of years that an oil company can write off their expenses. We shortened it. And as a result, you can see in the paper that ConocoPhillips, for the first time in several years, paid the highest tax to the state of Alaska, $1.2 billion for fiscal year 18. So we addressed some of these issues in HB 111 a couple years ago. So that's I just wanted to state that for the record. But the question that I have for you is, how did you notify, for example, Senator Olson's district, the North Slope, that this provision in repealing the local property tax, how did you notify the business leaders and North Slope Borough? Did they read about it in the paper? Did you give them a courtesy call a day ahead of time? Did you discuss it a week to 2 weeks prior?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff.
Could you broaden the answer also, because I think it would probably touch on the next item also, and possibly the ones coming. Just kind of how the process was put together to come up with these suggestions and notifications.
Through the chair, governor's budget was presented last week to everyone at the same time. We will have the Commissioner of Revenue here, I believe, tomorrow. He can talk about any specific conversations that he's had after the presentation of that budget.
Okay. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said the You said the governor doesn't want to raise taxes. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so that's debatable.
We have talked a little bit about the fisheries landing tax and resource development tax, $28 million. Do you happen to, can you give us a little more detail on that tax, how it works, where it impacts, so people at home could follow it?
Sure. Mr. Chair, these are two taxes, fisheries business tax and fisheries resource landing tax. Again, by statute, they're shared with municipalities that are fishing communities. The Department of Revenue publishes a shared taxes report every year. It's posted on their website. We'd be happy to provide it to the committee. It breaks down for every municipality that shares in some sort of tax, including these taxes, the amount collected and shared by the for those municipalities.
Okay, and I think Dutch Harbor is most likely the largest.
On Alaska, sir.
On Alaska, Dutch Harbor, right?
That's about.
On down. So we'll have that before us. My understanding is this will take legislation. Is that not correct?
This particular piece is appropriated in the budget. It can be removed from the budget without changing the statute, and then the issue would be back before us again next year.
On that point, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, it was. Go ahead, Senator Hoffman.
On that point, when we met with the governor earlier on, he said, I think it was his statement that until the laws are changed, those laws are the law of the land. And I think that goes back to his position on the dividend. The dividend says we have to give $3,000 per capita. And until that law is changed, that is what the governor is going to be implementing. So I'm finding it hard to fathom that he plans to pick and choose which legislation, which laws are on the books, and which ones he will enforce and which ones won't he. To me, that's a very large inconsistency, and I'm wondering, is that your testimony here today? Through the budget process, he plans on enforcing certain laws and ignoring other laws.
Through the chair, the governor's submitting, along with this budget, statutory changes to change the law so that the statutes will be consistent with the appropriations.
And I'm fully aware of that. The problem is, until those laws are changed, will the governor enforce those laws? I understand the political process and how laws are made and not made. I've been at this table for 20 years, Ms. Ardwin, so I don't need schooling on that subject. The question that I have is, until those laws are changed, will the governor honor those laws, or will he pick and choose which ones he wants to enforce that are currently statute and the law of the land?
Through the chair, the governor will continue to enforce all of the laws of the state of Alaska. He is proposing to you changes in those laws. Whether or not you pass those, he cannot force your hand, but he will be and will continue to enforce the laws of Alaska.
So the earlier response might have been garbled a little bit. So if we don't take statutory action, the legislature, to remove the fisheries landing tax split, as an example, or the petroleum property tax split, then the current law of the land will continue to be the law of the land, and those appropriations then will take place in FY 2020 without repeal. Is that correct?
To the chair, yes. When you change appropriations, what Director Barnhill was pointing out is that some of these proposals are appropriations that are already in the budget. Mm-hmm. You have the ability by law to change those appropriations. What we're saying is that the governor is proposing changes in statute for everything that he's proposing in law to make permanent changes in statute. But those things that you have put into appropriations bills in the past may be changed by you by changes in appropriations.
Okay. Senator Michiki.
Yeah, I just want to point out again that we continue to talk about this approach that was not going to be raising taxes on Alaskans, which is not a fact. It's an approach that doesn't change the state tax rate, but dramatically changes the local tax rate. And I'll give you a couple of examples. One is the fisheries tax. What I want to get into just for a second is the local petroleum property tax. So in running facilities that are related to petroleum, there's some requirements that come along with it. Federal Department of Transportation, Federal Coast Guard has certain response capabilities that are required. The local governments, so we're talking about Cook Inlet, not going to talk about anyone else, I'm going to talk about Cook Inlet. My district provides those services. And for full disclosure, I'm the vice chair of the local emergency planning committee. I'm the chair of the Cook Inlet, Coast Guard's Cook Inlet Harbor Safety Committee, which are both related to those requirements. So you talk about not raising taxes, but these are services that are required by federal law. We're quite minimalist on the Kenai. We operate very leanly, but those are requirements to serve those petroleum facilities. So are you proposing that if we have a direct cost that those facilities that are meeting federal law so that the state can bring in those taxes, severance and other taxes related to the industry, should they bill the state for that amount so that we, in fact, stay with your philosophy of not raising taxes, or are you just saying that the property taxes and sales taxes in my district must be increased to meet the federal requirements that deliver those revenues to the state?
We're going to get back with you on that, Senator. Okay. About the specific facilities and federal requirements.
Thank you.
Okay, that's fair. On the resource landing tax and the fisheries business tax, a lot of those are shared with the coastal communities. And for those watching at home, the tax is on the fish sales, call it, fish landings. And if you have a lot of landings in your community, you get a little more. And if you have less landings, you get a little less. And those taxes that are paid by the fishermen are then flowed, the city's portion is flowed into their budget, and then a good chunk of that is flowed back to the ports and harbors for infrastructure to drive the economy forward and continue to have landings. So it's part of the fueling of the economy. So has there been any discussion or policy considerations on tipping that balance that drives that economy forward? That economic base called fisheries?
Mr. Chair, each of these items was prepared and included in the budget as a way to achieve a budget that was within the policy parameters that were dictated by the governor, and that is get to $1.6 billion, keep the permanent fund dividend whole. Getting to that number without redirecting some of this revenue was incredibly difficult.
Okay.
I fully recognize that there are impacts for each and every piece of this budget. Any other options will have impacts.
Okay. That's fine. You have a Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Either one of you, how does this budget proposal grow Alaska's economy?
I missed that part of that question that faded out.
How does this budget proposal grow Alaska's economy, because I've been getting phone calls over the weekend from business that it's not sending good signals to them. So I'll just leave it at that.
Through the chair, we've discussed at a previous meeting the impacts of the budget imbalance on Alaska's economy. We've had a negative effects on Alaska's economy because of our fiscal situation, and any money that's taken out of the private sector to continue to be put into government will continue to deteriorate Alaska's economy. As you know, we're lagging the nation right now. Our economy is falling when the rest of the nation's increasing, and we strive to reverse that situation, starting with getting our fiscal house in order.
Okay. Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a follow-up question to Senator Hoffman's earlier statement in terms of following the laws of the land. But so the governor is going to introduce his sort of permanent solution to the budget crisis by introducing bills of legislation, but he would still be following the law if he uses his power of veto to sort of an appropriation bill to sort of veto the funds and sort of have them just sit there in general funds. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. We have one item left on this, and that's shared alcohol, and that is actually going back to the community. Is that correct?
Correct.
Mr. Barnhill?
Yes.
Okay, just on a lighter comment on that. Gus Volstead, may he rest in Valhalla in peace. He always made the comment in the come back from fishing that he's going to drink the state back to prosperity. So I hope we don't go down that road. This is actually a preventive to take those funds and put it into our alcohol and drug programs at the local level and state level to try to push back on that. Is that not correct?
Correct. The way this would be redistributed would be to an additional amount that would be funneled into the community assistance program in AS 2960.
And that should be good news for the communities as we battle that issue across the state.
Correct.
Well, I think the communities will appreciate that. I think we'll go on to debt reimbursement, and if you could, we'll do the same thing as Mr. Barnhill suggested. We'll do debt reimbursement, and then if we finish that, we'll go to the next item. If not, we'll pick it up tomorrow.
So, Mr. Chair, the debt reimbursement component or section of the budget is reduced substantially as presented by the previous governor. It was $215 million UGF, unrestricted general fund, $16.5 million designated general fund. We are proposing to reduce that by $100 million, which is the combined amount for school debt reimbursement, and as well by $4.5 million for the capital projects debt reimbursement. Both of these programs are set out in statute, so we are also proposing to repeal the statutes that provide for these forms of debt reimbursement. An important consideration to note is that all of this form of debt reimbursement is subject to appropriation. The school debt reimbursement has been reduced at various points in the past, most recently by Governor Walker, but there were several years when school debt reimbursement was funded at less than 100%. Of course, this is the first time that there is a proposal to reduce it entirely. The amount would shift back to the municipalities that issued the general obligation bond to fund the school construction, and they would be responsible for paying that. My understanding is that this will have no impact on the state's credit rating, because those bonds were all issued as general obligations of the issuing municipalities with notice to the taxpayers that if the state did not supply the reimbursement, they would nevertheless be responsible for that.
Are you done with that section?
The capital projects debt is set out in three statutes that are proposed to be repealed. They cover two projects of the University of Alaska, six port projects through the Department of Transportation, and two utilities projects through the Alaska Energy Authority.
Okay, we have Senator Machicki and Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, I want to make sure that I don't have my comments all on the negative side of the ledger. I'm very supportive of these changes, and I'll tell you why. I'm being pure to my earlier philosophy. I don't support your shift of taxes to the local communities. We're not talking about not introducing new taxes. We're talking about not introducing state taxes, which is your approach. But on the other side of the fence, I believe at this table and in the Senate, we have passed repealing school debt reimbursement because the state has no control of the burden that local communities can put on the state with this reimbursement.
We're going to take a brief at ease. On record, Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I just want to again and staying pure on not shifting cost and taxes to the local municipalities. I think this is the right move so that local municipalities can't shift burden to the state. So I appreciate this, and I appreciate a lot of aspects about this budget. Do you sort of understand my philosophy on the shift and why I would support this and not the fisheries and petroleum tax shift?
I don't think you have to explain why a particular senator supports or doesn't support something, but if you could help them with the concept.
Through the chair, thank you, Senator. I think that there's a lot of conversations that have been begun by this budget, and state and local alignment is something that we can continue to discuss because it's all over the budget. There are numerous items in this budget where funds are shared with municipalities and boroughs.
Okay, we're going to have one last question. We're going to run out of time. We have been called to the floor, and then we'll pick it up tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. On the school debt reimbursement, does this apply to FY19 or 20 or both? And just want to clarify, are these for debts that have already been incurred in the past that where the school districts may have relied on the state, the thinking that the state would reimburse them?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, this does not apply to FY19. It applies to FY20. If the statute is repealed, it would apply to years FY21 and forward. I think I missed the last part of your question.
Just on the debts already incurred. So right. School district, and how many years back would that go? Are we still running out bonds?
Yes, this applies to projects that have already been incurred. As you may know, but for the benefit of the public watching, we're currently in moratorium on school debt reimbursement for new projects until FY21. How far back this goes, there's projects, we can provide the full spreadsheet to the committee if you want all the details. Some of the projects do go back a ways. The total inventory of outstanding debt is $900 million.
Okay, we'll have all that historical stuff brought forward to the committee. We're going to end today. We'll pick you up tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., if we could, and finish it up. And then we'll start tomorrow, looks like, with the University of Alaska, Department of Military Veterans Affairs, Judiciary, Department of Transportation, Department of Revenue. We will not get through it, I can guarantee you. So we will do what we can tomorrow to chip through the schedule. Some of these upcoming ones will be a lot shorter. I expect the University of Alaska to be fairly lengthy, along with DOT, Department of Transportation. See everybody tomorrow. Smiley face, 9 a.m. We are adjourned.